This morning's scripture reading is from Hebrews 6, verses 9 through 12. Hear the word of the Lord. Even though we speak like this, dear friends, we are confident of better things in your case, things that accompany salvation. God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you have helped his people and continue to help them. We want each of you to show this same diligence to the very end in order to make your hope sure. We do not want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what God has promised. This is the word of the Lord.
Every time Connie reads the scripture, I start to just look at her and think of all the joy and everything in our lives that we've experienced, and that I have to remember, oh, got to get up there and remember what I want to say. But I appreciate you reading those passages. How many of you here are middle children? Do you have an older sibling, younger sibling? Yeah, there's a number of you, so you'll probably relate to what my experience was of a middle child being overshadowed by the older sibling. Little bit. I have a wonderful sister, older sister, I love very dearly, and we're very close to this day. But in my elementary years, she was very accomplished, very capable, an excellent student, did really well, and I was not. I wasn't quite that performer and all that. In fact, when I would go into a classroom, very often I heard this from my teachers. After a while, they would be bewildered and say, are you really her brother? You know what I'm getting at there. I struggled through those years, struggled with feeling inadequate, struggled with feeling not smart enough, not good enough, not measuring up to a standard that was established by that older sibling. And it was discouraging, quite discouraging. But there were two teachers in my life, and if anyone is a teacher, you'll, I think, really appreciate the example of these two and the influence they had, because you have that same influence. But two teachers. Mr. Hurd was my fifth grade teacher. He was a real big guy, athletic. We did after school recreation, and really a good guy. He drove a 56 Corvette. And I got to ride in it to the after-school games and stuff. In those days, you could do those things, but it was great. And then Mr. Hopps in seventh grade. Neither of them had my sister in their class. So that was a good thing. It was a very freeing kind of experience. They had no one to compare to and no expectations I had to live up to. And that was wonderful. And both of them took a real interest in me. Both of them really wanted me to flourish as a student. And both of them had a special ability to encourage. They knew I could be a better student, and they instilled that in me through the years we spent in those classrooms. Who are the people in your life who have been encouragers? Can you picture them? Can you see those folks along the way in one way or another encouraged you and just made it possible for you to strive and move forward in life? They're precious and rare, aren't they? But they make a really powerful and profound impact in our lives when they instill in us, like those two teachers did, a sense of worth and worthiness of their time and effort, worthy and having worth and esteemed to be capable people. I cite all that because in the passage, the short passage, but look what the author of Hebrews is doing in that passage. Up till now, this author, the preacher he's called, this leader of the church who's writing to Hebrew Christians has been a little bit heavy-handed, don't you think? He's saying things like, you guys, you should be well advanced in your faith, but you're like babies. That's pretty heavy. You should be farther along. You should be progressing, and yet you're not. And he's very heavy on them, but he wants to urge them into a deeper knowledge of God and a deeper connection with Jesus and a deeper living out of the implications of the gospel, a deeper conviction to follow Jesus despite the cost, because they've been paying a cost for doing so. And so here we see a shift in tone altogether from the previous chapters and the previous verses to this encouraging, gentle kind of tone that begins like this. Even though we speak, dear friends, speak like this, dear friends, we are convinced of better things in your case. There's something wonderful in that sentence. And the thing that's wonderful is the author uses the Greek word agapetoi. And you know agape is a word, a root of that, that refers to God's sacrificial, self-giving, divine kind of love. And the Hebrews author addresses the Christians that way. Dear friends, my beloved ones, or simply beloved. Now, I don't know about you, but when I've heard people either express that kind of description verbally or through their word, through their actions, that I'm beloved, that I'm loved by that person, it makes a big difference, doesn't it? When someone says to you, you are a dear friend, or I love you dearly, or I love you, simply like that, it hits somewhere deep within us, and it's an encouraging word for us to hear because it says that person cares about me. That person really embraces who I am. They know my shortcomings, and yet they can see what I can become. They know all about me, and yet they still love me. It's kind of awkward for men to say to another man, I love you. Maybe we can begin that kind of practice without any connotations other than the fact we really do love that person with the love that Christ has for us. When I recall the influence of Mr. Hurd and Mr. Hobbs, I just realized that was what was underlying the whole thing. They probably didn't really, well, they did care about my grades, but first and foremost, both of these guys cared about me. And it was kind of neat when I, at age 19, met Mr. Hobbs at a church, the church where I accepted Christ, and to realize, he was a Christian. Now I understand. Now I get it. Now I understand why he could love me the way he did, with that kind of unconditional and self-giving kind of love. I can't think of any better encouragement than for us to be able to say to someone, I truly love you. You are my beloved. You as a congregation are loved by me and by Connie. You love one another. We see it demonstrated. Let's continue to do so and press on in that. That's the encouragement the author gives to these Hebrew Christians who are having a really difficult time. But then he continues with this. He becomes even more powerful when we get to verse 10. God is not unjust. He'll not forget your work and the love you have shown him as you've helped his people and you continue to help them. And I'm going to paraphrase it by saying this. In other words, you're doing a good job. You're doing a very good job loving God, and you're doing a very good job of showing that love in your love for one another. You're showing a sacrificial love. In fact, when we get to the 10th chapter of Hebrews, there's a description of these people. It goes like this. Remember those earlier days after you received the light when you stood your ground in a great contest in the face of suffering? Sometimes you were publicly exposed to insult and persecution. At other times you stood side by side with those who were so treated. You sympathized with those in prison. You joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property because you knew that you yourselves had a better and lasting possessions. Do you see what the author's saying? Look how you've loved. You've loved one another. You've stood together in the face of persecution. You've stood with those who were imprisoned. You stood with those who were being persecuted and suffering. You even gave up your property for the sake of other people. That's a remarkable group of folks. And I'm going to hasten to add that I see that happening here in the midst of this congregation, that loving care for one another that's demonstrated in so many different ways. In fact, I'm going to have to point out that this demonstrated maybe to a little bit more than they would like, but the deacons who are here providing hospitality after memorial services, we're wearing them out, I'm afraid. But what a way to demonstrate that kind of love in a tangible way. But I want to talk about this standing with those who are persecuted. Last week, you know, in the news, the busload of Coptic Christians on their way to a retreat south of Cairo, attacked by extremists, Islamic extremists, 29 people, several children were killed. The persecution of Christians around the world right now is higher than it has ever been in history. In fact, more Christians have been killed just in the past 100 years than in all of history leading up to that past 100 years. It's serious. Literally hundreds of thousands of Christians are being persecuted all around the world, many imprisoned because of their faith, like Pastor Andrew Brunson we prayed for earlier. Millions have been displaced from their homes in Iraq and Syria and other parts of the Middle East and Africa. Christians are the targets of genocide. That's happening right now in South Sudan and other parts of our world. It's an incredible, massive persecution of Christians. And like the Hebrew Christians, you and I are called to stand alongside of those who are persecuted. And you ask, well, how can we do that? They're in Sudan or Iraq or Syria. Well, the best thing I can do is encourage you to become informed and find out what you can do to stand with those who are persecuted. Open Doors USA, write that down. If you want to check out their website, opendoorsusa.com or org, you'll have to figure it out, I'm not sure, is one group of folks who are standing with persecuted Christians. Open Doors USA. There are probably others, but that would be a great place to start. Let's stand with those around the world, even in our own country, who are persecuted for being Christians. The Hebrew Christians were also doing a very good job of loving others with a real self-giving kind of love, a sacrificial kind of love. I think we saw this demonstrated a little bit last week when the bomb blast rocked the stadium and the station in Manchester, England. There were two men who were at that station. They had gone there, homeless men, maybe you've read about them, to panhandle as the people were leaving the concert. They thought that would be a good venue for getting a lot of money. The bomb exploded. They heard the noise. The people started to flood out, but the two of them, Stephen Jones and Chris Parker, went in towards where the blast had occurred. And as the reports are, one of them saw a teenage girl lying there. Her legs had been blown off. He took care of her. He wrapped her in some t-shirts and other things, provided aid for her. The other went to an aid of a 60-year-old woman who was badly injured. And they described it as people were running out and literally jumping over the bodies of the victims and those who were injured to get out. These two men went in and knelt and cared for those. Chris Parker knelt by that 60-year-old woman, comforted her, and held her as she died. That's sacrificial love. Instead of running away from danger, running into it, willing to give themselves and caring. Sacrificial love. I don't know if you're familiar with a Catholic priest named Brennan Manning. Anyone familiar with Brennan Manning? Oh man, an amazing guy. Amazing books. He tells a story of how he got the name Brennan. Maybe you know this story, but he talked about this growing up with his best friend, Ray. The two of them did everything together. They bought a car together when they were teenagers. They double dated, went to school together, and so forth. They even enlisted in the army together, went to boot camp, and were in the same unit when they went into battle. They were in a foxhole one night. They were reminiscing about their old days in Brooklyn, and Ray was listening and eating a chocolate bar, and suddenly a grenade had been thrown, and it came into that foxhole. And as Brennan Manning says, Ray looked at me, smiled, dropped his chocolate bar, threw himself on the live grenade. It exploded, killed him, but my life was spared. He then became a priest some years after. He was instructed to take the name of a saint when he was ordained as a priest, and he thought of his friend Ray Brennan. And so he took the name Brennan as his own name. He went to visit Ray's mother some years later in Brooklyn. They sat up late one night, and Brennan Manning asked her, "Do you think Ray loved me?" And he said, "Mrs. Brennan got up off the couch. She shook her finger in front of my face and shouted, 'What more could he have done for you?'" And then he said, "At that moment, I had an epiphany. I imagined myself standing before the cross of Jesus and wondering, 'Does God really love me?' And then I saw Jesus' mother, Mary, pointing her finger at me saying, 'What more could he have done for you?'" Self-sacrificing love. God's demonstrated that for you and for me through Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us. It's the kind of love that you and I are called to have for one another and for others. Self-sacrificing love. Dearly beloved followers of Jesus, the Hebrews author writes, you're doing a good job loving one another, even sacrificially loving one another. And the third encouragement comes from verse 11. We want each of you to show the same diligence to the very end so that what you hope for may be fully realized. Diligence. Be diligent to the very end. Continue to pay attention, close attention, and following Christ. Diligence. I came across a list of entries that were made in hospital medical charts. It sounds familiar to me, so I may have shared some of these with you before, but it proves a point about how often we are not diligent. For example, one entry in the chart read this: patient recovering from forehead cut became very angry when given an enema by mistake. It shows a lack of diligence, doesn't it? On the second day, the knee was better. On the third day, it disappeared. That's another one. Patient has chest pain if she lies on her left side for over a year. I mean, the information's there. It just doesn't come. There wasn't enough diligence in how it was written. Okay, bear with this one. Rectal exam revealed a normal size thyroid. Yeah, it takes a while to process that one, doesn't it? But yes. Patient has two teenage children, but no other abnormalities. Well, we could go on. There's a couple. Okay, I'll go a couple more. While in the ER, she was examined, X-rated, and sent home. There's a couple more. Okay, the lab tests indicated abnormal lover function. Simple typographical error there, not being diligent. I saw the patient today who is still under our car for physical therapy. These are crazy, aren't they? Last one. She is numb from her toes down. Okay, it's a lack of diligence. You get the point, right? You got to pay attention. You've got to be diligent to get these things right, or it can be very, very confusing. But the author's saying, look, be diligent. Keep at it. Invest yourself. And do so to the end. And then the author continues, not only to be diligent to the end, but to do so in imitating Jesus. We don't want you to become lazy, the author says, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what has been promised. Continue to imitate those who have been followers of Jesus. It's another way of saying imitate Jesus, isn't it? Continue to imitate those who loved with a selfless, sacrificial, Christ-like love. Continue to imitate those who were faithful in trusting God's promise and were diligent to the end. So here's another question for you. Who are some of the people you have imitated or do imitate as followers of Jesus? Can you picture those people? Again, people who encouraged you along the way, probably, and you imitate who they are. I was thinking about that question, and I thought, you know, there are a number of people right here at Trinity that I have sought to imitate and continue to. That's the effect we have on one another. We can model, we can be those who others follow. There have been other people, some at a distance, like authors, John Stott, or Tim Keller, Philip Yancey, the list goes on and on, who have been people I have sought to imitate by knowing them through their books. Others who are hands-on people, Mother Teresa, great person to imitate, don't you think? Richard Stearns is the president of World Vision. Another model for me. And then some of them have been friends. Ed Bradley is a guy I grew up with. A long time ago. Ed left a very lucrative career. The company's not there anymore, E.F. Hutton, but he was up in that organization. He left that to start a ministry that seeks to bring aid to children living in mega cities around the world. And he devoted himself and the rest of his life to pursuing that ministry. There's a young man named Ryan Boyette. I've never met him in person, but I follow him about 10 years ago at age 26. He was working with Samaritan's Purse in South Sudan. And so the Samaritan's Purse people thought, it's getting too dangerous because of the civil war. We're leaving. And Ryan said, all right, I resign. I'm staying. And at age 26, he began to invest himself there among the Nuba people in South Sudan, letting the world know, first of all, what's going on in that area, and then caring for those people and garnering support for medical care and food relief and discipling pastors and people and training pastors. And he's been there ever since, committing himself to those folks. Sacrificial love. That's something I'd like to imitate. The Apostle Paul, there's someone to imitate, don't you think? Especially when he says, I want to know Christ and the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of sharing in his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, and somehow to attain the resurrection of the dead. Not that I've already obtained it, but or already have been made perfect, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Forgetting what's behind, straining forward toward what is ahead, I press on. That's something to imitate, don't you think? He persevered to help others. He gave himself sacrificially. He pressed on despite the difficulties. And then, of course, our ultimate example is to imitate is Jesus himself and his sacrificial love and self-giving. N.T. Wright puts it, or tells a story, I should say, an archbishop in the Church of England. He was hearing a confession of sin from three hardened teenagers in that church, in the church. All three boys were making a joke of it. They met with the archbishop. They confessed to this long list of very ridiculous, made-up, grievous sins that they really hadn't committed. It was all just a joke. Well, the archbishop saw right through it. Their bad practical joke played along with the, he played along with the first two, and then they ran out of the church laughing, but then he listened carefully to the third boy, the prankster, as N.T. Wright calls him, and before he got away, he told the young man, okay, you've confessed these sins. Now I want you to do something that would show that you're truly repentant. I want you to go to the back of the church and look at the picture of Jesus that's hanging there, picture of him on the cross, and I want you to look at his face and say, you did all that for me, and I don't care a bit. Say it three times. So the boy took off to the back of the church, looked up at the picture of Jesus there on the cross. He said, you did all that for me, and I don't care a bit. And then he said it a second time. But as the archbishop tells it, the boy couldn't say it the third time because he broke down in tears at that point. And the archbishop says, I know this story to be true because I was that young man. And N.T. Wright goes on to say, there's something about the cross. Something about the cross. The sacrifice that Jesus made for all of us on the cross. Something leaps over all the theoretical discussions, and there are a lot of them, regarding atonement and so forth, and how we explain it. But something leaps over that, he says, and it grasps us. And when we're grasped by it, somehow we have a sense that what is grasping us is the love of God, the cross of Jesus. I want us to be people who encourage one another to continue to love one another with that kind of that self-giving, sacrificial kind of love. Of course, that's on our minds this weekend as we think of those who sacrificed themselves in the service of our country. But think of the sacrificial, self-giving love of Jesus and let that be our model, that which we imitate with one another and with the world around us. I believe God's saying to you and me, follow Jesus in the path of obedience and faith. I'll bring you to a place of rest and joy. Many have followed that path of obedience, none more excellently, perfectly than Jesus. Now, my beloved, keep putting one foot in front of the other along your journey of faith. Keep on in your love for God. Keep on in all the ways you demonstrate that sacrificial, self-giving, Christ-like love by caring for one another. Keep on trusting my promise of rest and triumph. Keep up the good work.